This is special coverage from NPR News. Pope Francis is about to address a joint meeting of Congress here in Washington. He is the first pontiff to speak to a combined gathering of U.S. senators and members of Congress.
She's Renee Montaigne. I'm Steve Inskeep. The Pope is in the second full day of his trip to the United States. And later today, he's going to meet with some smaller groups of people, low-income people, some of the homeless in the nation's capital. Right now, a good part of the nation's capital has turned out either to watch the Pope inside the House chamber, which is crowded now with lawmakers, as well as presidential candidates, and also people outside the Capitol by the thousands, waiting simply to hear this speech. Yesterday, of course, the Pope met with President Obama and Catholic bishops, held a mass for the canonization of a new saint, the Spanish priest Junipero Serra, who helped establish Spain and the church in California.
And of course, as everyone is waiting for the Pope, we're also seeing members of the Supreme Court. The Pope in the U.S. Capitol, Steve, of course, much of what he speaks about takes on a political cast, just partly because of where he is and who he's speaking to, whether he intends that or not. On the South Lawn of the White House yesterday, he spoke of one issue that he cares deeply about, and that was climate change.
Yeah, and here are some of his words from yesterday. We still have time to make the changes needed to bring about a sustainable and integral development, for we know that things can change. And he said stronger things as well. He put out an encyclical that I'm looking at here that's essentially a long letter in which he talked about overcoming indifference specifically on the issue of climate change. And these statements have been much debated here in the United States because climate change has been so debated.
And to help us make more sense of what the Pope is saying and has been saying, we have a group of NPR correspondents. And here in the studio with us is Tom Gelton. Tom covers religion for NPR, and he can tell us more about what the Pope is expected to say to Congress. Tell us, Tom. I mean, he's been saying certain things. Surely these same themes will show up in this upcoming speech.
Well, Renee, remember he's had different audiences. He spoke yesterday to bishops, and his message was, of course, unique to that audience. What would he say to bishops? And he will now be speaking to policymakers.
And as we can see just now, the Pope is entering the chamber.
You see those white robes, the familiar white robes behind the man who just announced his entry. Perhaps we'll get a little bit of sound in the background as he gets a long round of applause here in the House chamber. The Pope simply smiling gently as he goes along. Not shaking hands, by the way, as we would see. Now he's begun to shake hands with Secretary of State John Kerry. Yeah. Not shaking hands the way a president typically would, but shaking a few hands on his way in and heading up to the dais. Tom, continue. This is a Pope who is making a statement. You wouldn't want to say a political statement. Perhaps he wouldn't want to say a political statement, but he's weighing in on political issues.
He's weighing in, and what I was saying before is that he tailors what he says to his audience. And these are politicians. These are people who make policy. So this is one venue where he is likely to talk about political issues in a way perhaps he wasn't yesterday.
And the slightest bow by Pope Francis with a hand on his chest, the slightest bow as he turns and acknowledges the audience that continues to applaud him. We should mention, talk about political moments, we have several senators who are presidential candidates in the room. I believe Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, presidential candidate in the room. You have quite an assembly of power and people aspiring to power, and they have all come and they are facing this single man in the white robe. Let's give a listen.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you Pope Francis of the Holy See.
Speaker John Boehner making the announcement.
And right behind the Pope is Speaker John Boehner and Vice President Joe Biden. And he is turning now to greet them, or at least apparently acknowledging them, yes, greeting them. And now the Pope Francis is turning and stepping up to the podium and beginning to speak.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, honorable members of the Congress, dear friends, I am most grateful for your invitation to address this joint session of Congress in the land of the free at the home of the brave.
remarkably gentle voice that carries such power in the world today.
I would like to think that the reason for this is that I too am a son of this great continent from which we have all received so much and toward which we share a common responsibility. Each son or daughter of a given country has a mission, a personal and social responsibility. Your own responsibility as members of Congress is to enable this country by your legislative activity to grow as a nation. You are the face of its people. They are representatives. You are called to defend and preserve the dignity of your fellow citizens in the tireless and demanding pursuit of the common good. For this is the chief aim of all politics. A political society endures when it seeks as a vocation to satisfy common needs by stimulating the growth of all its members, especially those in situations of greater vulnerability or risk. Legislative activity is always based on the care of the body people. To this, you have been invited, called, convened by those who elect you.
We're listening to Pope Francis before the Congress.
Yours is a walk which makes me reflect in two ways on the figure of Moses. On the one hand, the patriarch and lawgiver of the people of Israel symbolizes the need of people to keep alive their sense of unity by means of just legislation. On the other, the figure of Moses leads us directly to God, and thus to the transcendent dignity of the human being. Moses provides us with a good synthesis of a walk. You are asked to protect by means of the law the image and likeness fashioned by God on every human life. Today, I would like not only to address you, but through you, the entire people of the United States, here together with the representatives, I would like to take this opportunity to dialogue with the many thousands of men and women who strive each day to do a honest day's work, to bring home the daily bread, to save money, and one step at a time to build a better life for their families. These are men and women who are not concerned simply with paying their taxes, but in their own quiet way sustain the life of society. They generate solidarity by their actions, and they create organizations which offer a helping hand to those most in need. I would also like to enter into dialogue with the many elderly persons who are a storehouse of wisdom forged by experience and who seek in many ways, especially through voluntary work, to share their stories and their insights. I know that many of them are retired, but still active. They keep working to build up this land. I also want to dialogue with all those young people who are working to realize their great and noble aspirations, who are not led astray by facile proposals, and who face difficult situations, often as a result of immaturity on the part of many adults. I wish to dialogue with all of you, and I would like to do so through the historical memory of your people.
This is special coverage from NPR News.
My visit takes place at a time when men and women of goodwill are marking the anniversaries of several great Americans. The complexities of history, and the reality of human weakness notwithstanding, these men and women, for all their many differences and limitations, were able, by hard work and self-sacrifice, some at the cost of their lives, to build a better future. They shaped fundamental values which endure forever in the spirit of the American people. A people with this spirit can live through many crises, tensions, and conflicts while always finding the resources to move forward and to do so with dignity. These men and women offer us a way of seeing and interpreting reality. In honoring their memory, we are inspired, even amid conflicts and in the here and now of each day, to draw upon our deepest cultural reserve. I would like to mention four of these Americans: Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, and Thomas Merton.
Pope Francis in his white robes, standing before John Boehner and Vice President Biden, Speaker Boehner in their dark suits.
This year marks the 150th anniversary of the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln, the guardian of liberty, who labored tirelessly that this nation under God might have a new birth of freedom. Building a future of freedom requires love of the common good and cooperation in a spirit of subsidiarity and solidarity. All of us are quite aware of and deeply worried by the disturbing social and political situation of the world today. Our world is increasingly a place of violent conflict, hatred, and brutal atrocities, committed even in the name of God and of religion. We know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. This means that we must be specially attentive to every type of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind. A delicate balance is required to combat violence perpetrated in the name of a religion, an ideology, or an economic system, while also safeguarding religious freedom, intellectual freedom, and individual freedoms.
We're listening to Pope Francis in Congress.
But there is another temptation which we must specially guard against. The simplistic reductionism which sees only good or evil, or if you will, the righteous and sinners. The contemporary world with its open wounds, which affect so many of our brothers and sisters, demands that we confront every form of polarization which would divide it into these two camps. We know that in the attempt to be fit of enemy without, we can be tempted to feed the enemy within, to imitate the hatred and violence of tyrants and murderers is the best way to take their place. That is something which you, as people, reject.
Remarkable statement to make in this chamber, this Congress, speaking against polarization and dividing the world into good and evil.
Our response must instead be one of hope and healing, of peace and justice. We are asked to assume the courage and the intelligence to resolve today's many geopolitical and economic crises, even in the developed world, the effects of unjust structures and actions are all too apparent. Our efforts must aim at restoring hope, righting wrongs, maintaining commitments, and thus promoting the well-being of individuals amongst peoples. We must move forward together as one in a renewed spirit of fraternity and solidarity, cooperating generously for the common good.
And that's Pope Francis talking to Congress about cooperating for the common good.
The challenges facing us today call for a renewal of that spirit of cooperation which has accomplished so much good throughout the history of the United States. The complexity, the gravity, and the urgency of these challenges demand that we pool our resources and talents and resolve to support one another with respect for our differences and our convictions of conscience.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
In this land, the various religious denominations have greatly contributed to building and strengthening society. It is important that today, as in the past, the voice of faith continue to be heard, for it is a voice of fraternity and love, which tries to bring out the best in each person and in each society. Such cooperation is a powerful resource in the battle to eliminate new global forms of slavery, born of grave injustices, which can be overcome only through new policies and new forms of social consensus. Politics is, instead, an expression of our compelling need to live as one in order to build as one the greatest common good, that of a community which sacrifices particular interests in order to share in justice and peace its goods, its interests, its social life. I do not underestimate the difficulty that this involves, but I encourage you in this effort.
Americans, of course, will recognize the Pope referencing the Declaration of Independence there.
Here, too, I think of the march which Martin Luther King led from Selma to Montgomery 50 years ago as part of the campaign to fulfill his dream of full civil and political rights for African Americans. That dream continues to inspire us all, and I am happy that America continues to be, for many, a land of dreams. Dreams which lead to action, to participation, to commitment. Dreams which awaken what is deepest and truest in the life of the pauper. In recent centuries, millions of people came to this land to pursue the dream of building a future in freedom. We, the people of this continent, are not fearful of foreigners, because most of us were once foreigners.
Pope Francis speaking to Congress about immigration, migration, and his own story. His father immigrated to Argentina.
I say this to you as the son of immigrants, knowing that so many of you are also descendants from immigrants.
Immigrated from Italy to Argentina.
Tragically, the rights of those who were here long before us were not always respected. For those peoples and their nations from the heart of American democracy, I wish to reaffirm my highest esteem and appreciation. Those first contacts were often turbulent and violent, but we know that it's very difficult to judge the past by the criteria of the present.
Remarkable reference given that he just conferred sainthood on Junipero Serra.
Our midst appeals to us, we must not repeat the sins and the errors of the past. We must resolve now to live as nobly as and as justly as possible, as we educate new generations not to turn their back on our neighbors and everything around us. Building a nation calls us to recognize that we must constantly relate to others, rejecting a mindset of hostility in order to adopt one of reciprocal subsidiarity in a constant effort to do our best. I'm confident that we can do this. Our world is facing a refugee crisis of a magnitude not seen since the Second World War. This presents us with great challenges and many hard decisions. On this continent, too, thousands of persons are led to travel north in search of a better life for themselves and for their loved ones, in search of greater opportunity. It is not what we want for our own children. We must not be taken aback by the numbers, but rather view them as persons, seeing their faces and listening to their stories, trying to respond as best we can to their situation, to respond in a way which is always human, just, and fraternal. We need to avoid a common temptation nigh awaits to discard whatever proves troublesome. Let us remember the golden rule: do unto others as you will have them do unto you. This rule points us in a clear direction. Let us treat others with the same passion and compassion with which we want to be treated. Let us seek for others the same possibilities which we seek for ourselves. Let us help others to grow as we would like to be helped ourselves. In a word, if we want security, let us give security. If we want life, let us give life. If we want opportunity, let us provide these opportunities. The yardstick we use for others will be the yardstick which time uses for us.
Pope Francis urging Congress not to be taken aback by the numbers of migrants, immigrants coming to this country. Rather, he says, view them as persons.
The Golden Rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development.
Another word that he can say is not meant politically, but will be taken politically here, speaking of the defense of life.
This conviction has led me from the beginning of my ministry to advocate at different levels the global abolition of the death penalty. I am convinced that this way is the best. Since every life is sacred, every human person is endowed with unalienable dignity, and society can only benefit from the rehabilitation of those convicted of crimes. Recently, my brother bishops here in the United States renewed the call for the abolition of the death penalty. Not only do I support them, but I also offer encouragement to all those who are convinced that a just and necessary punishment must never exclude the dimension of hope and the goal of rehabilitation. In these times, when social concerns are so important, I cannot fail to mention the servant of God, Dorothy Day, who founded the Catholic Worker Movement. Her social activism, her passion for justice and for the cause of the oppressed were inspired by the gospel, her faith, and the example of the saints. How much progress has been made in this area, in so many parts of the world? How much has been done in these first years of the third millennium to raise people out of extreme poverty? I know that you share my conviction that much more still needs to be done, and in times of crisis and economic hardship, a spirit of global solidarity must not be lost. At the same time, I would encourage you to keep in mind all those people around us who are trapped in a cycle of poverty. They too need to be given hope. The fight against poverty and hunger must be fought constantly and on many fronts, especially in its course. I know that many Americans today, as in the past, are working to deal with this problem. It goes without saying that part of this great effort is the creation and distribution of wealth. The right use of natural resources, the proper application of technology, and the harnessing of the spirit of enterprise are essential elements of an economy which seeks to be modern, inclusive, and sustainable. Business is a noble vocation directed to producing wealth and improving the world. It can be a fruitful source of prosperity from the area in which it operates, especially if it sees the creation of jobs as an essential part of its service to the common good. This common good also includes the earth, a central theme of the encyclical, which I recently wrote in order to enter into the dialogue with all people about our common home. We need a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect us all. In Laudato Si, I call for a courageous and responsible effort to redirect our steps and to avert the most serious effects of the environmental deterioration caused by human activity. I'm convinced that we can make a difference. I'm sure. And I have no doubt that the United States and this Congress have an important role to play. Now is the time for courageous action and strategies aimed at implementing a culture of care and an integrated approach to combating poverty, restoring dignity to the excluded, and at the same time, protecting nature.
This is special coverage from NPR News of Pope Francis speaking to Congress.
We have the freedom needed to limit and direct technology, to devise intelligent ways of developing and limiting our power, and to put technology at the service of another type of progress, one which is here, more human, more social, more integral. In this regard, I am confident that America's outstanding academic and research institutions can make a vital contribution in the years ahead.
And now we're about to learn about Thomas Merton, the other great American whom Pope Francis mentioned earlier, less famous than others.
A century ago, at the beginning of the Great War, which Pope Benedict XV termed appointed slaughter, another notable American was born, the Cistercian monk Thomas Merton. He remains a source of a spiritual inspiration and guide for many people. In his autobiography, Merton wrote, "I came into the world free by nature in the image of God. I was nevertheless the prisoner of my own violence and my own selfishness in the image of the world into which I was born. That world was the picture of hell, full of men like myself, loving God and yet hating him, born to love him, living instead in fear of hopeless self-contradictory hangers." Merton was, above all, a man of prayer, a thinker who challenged the certitudes of this time and opened new horizons for souls and for the church. He was also a man of dialogue, a promoter of peace between peoples and religions. From this perspective of dialogue, I would like to recognize the efforts made in recent months to help overcome historic differences linked to painful episodes of the past. It is my duty to build bridges and to help all men and women in any way possible to do the same. When countries which have been at odds resume the path of the dialogue, a dialogue which may have been interrupted for the most legitimate of reasons, new opportunities open up for all. This that required and requires courage and daring, which is not the same as irresponsibility. A good political leader is one who, with the interests of all in mind, seizes the moment in a spirit of openness and pragmatism. A good political leader always opts to initiate processes rather than possessing space.
Our correspondent Tom Gelton points out that reference to opening interrupted dialogue can be taken as a reference to Cuba, which the Pope just visited.
Being at the service of dialogue and peace also means being truly determined to minimize and in the long term to end the many armed conflicts throughout our world. Here we have to ask ourselves, why are deadly weapons being sold to those who plan to inflict untold suffering on individuals and society? Sadly, the answer, as we all know, is simply for money. Money that is drenched in blood, often innocent blood, in the face of the shameful and culpable silence, it is our duty to confront the problem and to stop the arms strike. Three sons and one daughter of this land, four individuals, have four dreams. Lincoln, liberty. Martin Luther King, liberty in plurality and non-exclusion. Dorothy Day, social justice and the rights of persons. And Thomas Merton, the capacity for dialogue and openness to God. Four representatives of American people. I will end my visit to your country in Philadelphia, where I will take part in the World Meeting of Families. It is my wish that throughout our visit, the family should be a recurrent theme. How essential the family has been to the building of this country. and how worthy it remains for our support and encouragement. Yet, I cannot hide my concern for the family, which is threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without. Fundamental relations are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage and the family. I can only reiterate the importance and, above all, the richness and the beauty of family life. In particular, I would like to call attention to those family members who are the most vulnerable, the young. For many of them, a future filled with countless possibilities beckons. Yet so many others seem disoriented and aimless, trapped in a hopeless maze of violence, abuse, and despair. Their problems are our problems. We cannot avoid them. We need to face them together, to talk about them, and to seek effective solutions rather than getting bogged down in discussion. At the risk of oversimplifying, we might say that we live in a culture with precious young people known to start a family because they lack possibilities for the future. Yet, the same culture presents others with so many options that they too are dissuaded from starting a family. A nation can be considered great when it defends liberty, as Lincoln did, when it fosters a culture which enables people to dream of full rights for all brothers and sisters, as Martin Luther King sought to do, when it strives for justice and the cause of the oppressed, as Dorothy Day did by her tireless work, the fruit of a faith which becomes dialogue and soothes peace in the contemplative style of Thomas Merton. In this remark, I have sought to present some of the richness of your cultural heritage, of the spirit of the American people. It is my desire that this spirit continue to develop and grow so that as many young people as possible can inherit and dwell in a land which has inspired so many people to dream. God bless America.
Francis, in his white robes, with his glasses, his gentle voice, addressing this joint meeting of Congress. He has concluded the speech now. We can expect the applause to go on for quite some time. A standing ovation for Pope Francis at the end of a speech that touched in careful ways on many vital issues facing the United States. He warned against political polarization. He didn't call it political, but he talked about reducing issues to good versus evil. He spoke about unjust structures in society. He urged people not to view immigrants or migrants or refugees by their numbers, but view them as persons, as faces. He spoke about climate. He spoke about other issues. And we're going to talk about this now with NPR's Tom Gelton, who covers religion and is in our studios. Tom, what stood out to you?
Well, Steve, you know, something that our colleague Sylvia Poggioli has pointed out before about Pope Francis is that he often speaks in code. He often refers to issues with allusions. Now, as you say, he spoke very clearly about immigration. He spoke clearly about climate change, as he has done before. He spoke clearly about death penalty. But I heard him, by my interpretation, alluding to abortion, for example, when he talked about the need to defend human life at every stage.
Right.
I heard him talk about the importance of maintaining a traditional notion of family, which could be an allusion to the church's opposition to same-sex marriage. He talked about building dialogue and overcoming historical differences, which could allude to his role in negotiating the U.S.-Cuba opening. And finally, he talked about religious freedom, even though not quite so explicitly, perhaps, as some conservatives
have. And your one reference you made, Tom, underlines how this pope can do so much through what he chooses to emphasize. He talks about a culture of life. At that moment, he could go on to talk about abortion, and people would take it one way. Instead, he went on to talk explicitly about the death penalty. He didn't unsay anything about abortion. He talked about a culture of life, but he was more explicit about the other issue.
And you know, Steve, this goes to what he also says, which is that he sees his role as building bridges. And this is one way that he can do this, by raising issues that are important to him, but not alienating one side or another.
Let's bring in Sylvia Poggioli for just a moment. She is also listening in on the speech from, I believe, the press area for the those traveling with the Pope, of which you are one. Sylvia.
That's right. That's right. Well, I think certainly here Francis hit on all of his recurring topics, as Tom said. He insisted so much on the fact that politics should be at the service of the common good. He repeated this concept several times, talked about spirit of cooperation, promote the good of the human person. He said, and if politics is at the service of the human being, it cannot be a slave to the economy and finance. He talked a lot about this. I think Tom is exactly right. There are things he alluded to, and then there are things he spoke about very, very specifically. He didn't use the word abortion. He used the word death penalty. And where he was very, very straight out was his issue on immigration and on the environment. And he actually quoted himself a lot on his own encyclical on the environment. So it was a very interesting speech, but I think in tone it was infinitely milder than some of the things he said in the past. He gave a speech in Bolivia in July, which was really quite ferocious in its attack on unfettered capitalism. He brought that up today. It was milder, a softer version of most of his messages.
That was the gentle reference to unjust structures, perhaps, Sylvia?
I would say that. Yes, the income disparity, these are all his themes. You know, remember that Francis comes here, he's a Latin American. He is an Argentine who lived through the devastating economic crisis of Argentina in 2001. Blamed by many Argentines on certain economic policies emanating from the United States. So there's this Latin American diffidence, generally speaking, widespread toward the wealthy, affluent north neighbor to the north. So he comes with a global South perspective. I have to say though that I found his tone much softer than many of his speeches in the past.
Tom Gelton.
Well, Sylvia referenced his speech in Bolivia, which almost sounded like a Marxist. In this case, he quoted from his own encyclical, but he says from that encyclical, business is a noble vocation directed to producing wealth and improving the world. So he chose to emphasize other parts of his social encyclical that haven't gotten as much attention that, like Sylvia says, are actually much more moderate in tone than some of the other things he has said.
Now we have Elsa Chang also able to join us. Elsa, welcome.
Thank you.
Talk to us about what you saw in this chamber, the House chamber, and I'm thinking actually of the individuals that you would know at this point well. Speaker Boehner, for instance.
Right. I mean, well, this is a very, very personal day for Speaker Boehner. This day has been 20 years in the making. In 1994, he had written a letter to then-Speaker Tom Foley asking him to invite Pope John Paul II to address Congress. That invitation was never accepted. And this time around, Pope Francis took almost a year to accept the invitation to address Congress, but it happened. So for this day, Boehner is particularly, this is a particularly personally important day for Boehner. And I can't help but notice that it comes at a particularly politically volatile time for him. His leadership is under more question than possibly ever during his tenure as Speaker. This summer, there was a resolution introduced to oust him as Speaker. So the fact that the Pope is coming today, just days before a potential government shutdown, maybe speaks volumes about Boehner's intentions.
We're just a little bit past 11 o'clock Eastern Time, a little bit past 8 o'clock in the Pacific Coast. I just want to remind people that you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. Pope Francis has just in the last few minutes finished his speech to a joint meeting of Congress. Elsa Chang, by talking about Speaker Boehner, of course, you allude to the fact that this is a civic occasion. It's in a way a religious occasion, but it's also a political occasion.
Very much so.
And tell me if this Pope is in any way a divisive figure when you talk to these politicians who are in the room.
Well, there was just an amazing amount of giddiness in the days leading up to the Pope's arrival, about his arrival. There was a lot of talk about etiquette in the chamber, that we should avoid the jack-in-the-box standing ovations, the partisan standing ovations when Democrats stand up to points that they like and Republicans stand up to points that they like. That actually happened a little bit today. I noticed there was a rousing standing ovation when Pope Francis talked about the need to defend human life at every stage of development, a reference to abortion. There was also a rousing Democratic standing ovation when Pope Francis talked about the role, the important role that Congress has to play when it comes to climate change. And then there was a rousing GOP standing ovation when Pope Francis talked about his concern about the family and that he felt that fundamental relationships were being called into question, perhaps a reference to same-sex marriage.
Elsa, thanks very much. That's our Elsa Chang, who is in the House or is there at the House chamber. Let's turn now to Sue Davis. She is on the West Lawn. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
So you are on the West Lawn. I'm trying to figure out, are there crowds? Are there people outside, even though they can't really see what's going on?
Oh, they can absolutely see what's going on. There's been about 50,000 people that were ticketed to come to the event. It's almost like an inauguration out here. You have four large jumbotrons that are projected off the west front of the Capitol that have carried not only the Pope's meeting with Speaker Boehner prior to the entire...
Okay, we seem to be losing Sue out there on the West Lawn of the White House, although, as she says, there are many, many people out there, a large, large crowd. Why don't we go back to Elsa Chang just for a moment? And one thing, Elsa, something I was interested in. There's a disproportionate number of Catholics in that chamber, counting the Supreme Court. Was there any sense of that at all? I mean, this is their Pope.
You couldn't really tell just from the sound of the applause, the volume of the applause, the standing ovations. I mean, just to reiterate, there are about 31%, about 31% of Congress is Catholic as compared to 22% of the general American public. That percentage of Catholics in Congress has been increasing in recent years, particularly on the Republican side. It's interesting to note that both leaders of the House are Catholic, Speaker John Boehner and Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi. Speaker Boehner often talks about how he grew up wishing he could meet the Pope ever since he was an altar boy. This is a boy who grew up attending Mass every morning. He's been kind of dropping those nuggets from his childhood memories as in the days leading up to the Pope's arrival. But
okay.
Today,
Elsa, thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to move back to the studio here for a moment.
I want to ask Tom Gelton one quick question about who did not show up for this speech.
Notably, Steve, three conservative Catholics on the Supreme Court, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, and Antonin Scalia, did not show up. Now, we shouldn't read anything into that, but there are three conservative Catholics who were not there.
So many Catholics present, many Catholics in the Congress, more than in the country in a percentage terms, but those three conservative Catholics not there, as the Supreme Court, many of them did show up. Just want to mention that we'll be continuing to cover Pope Francis's visit. We've been listening here to special coverage of what may be the centerpiece or a centerpiece of this six-day visit to the United States. The Pope is in Washington, D.C. He's also going to be in New York. He's going to be in Philadelphia. And he has just concluded a speech full of substance. He warned against reducing problems to issues of good and evil, righteous versus sinners. Polarization was the word that he used. He warned against unjust structures in society, which some can take as a reference to capitalism, which he has condemned in other forums. He warned that we should look at immigrants, as migrants, as faces, as people, and not merely be stunned or taken aback by their numbers. And as was widely expected, Pope Francis also spoke about climate. He has spoken out fiercely on that issue and fitted into a broader concept of a culture of care. There's much more to discuss. We will continue discussing it throughout this day on NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
I'm Renee Montaigne, and this has been special coverage from NPR News of the Pope's address to Congress.